Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day.
Welcome back, traders and investors, to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep, brought to you by Chaikin Analytics. I'm your co-host, Joel Elkanen, along with Dennis Dick and Spencer Israel, and we have a special guest on the line this morning. That would be Reverend Emmanuel Lumsden. He's the founder and president of the Lannan Foundation. Reverend, how you doing on this Monday morning?
Great, Joel. It's good to hear from you. Thanks for the invitation to be on the show.
So are you excited about those New England Patriots?
Joel, I have to confess, I don't follow sports too closely.
All right, so let's get to what you do follow, and that is the markets here. And let's just start out with a couple of your longs here, and you've been talking about these for a long time. Let's just start with the granddaddy of them all, Apple. Are you still holding your full position coming into the upcoming earnings report?
Yeah, we are actually, Joel. So we did reduce, in all fairness, our position in Apple at the end of 2015, and that was in order to make larger allocations to the oil and gas space. But we did keep a good part of it, so it's still a significant part of our portfolio. In January 2016, when the markets were really volatile, we did add back to that position. So we're still holding it, and that reallocation wound up being pretty positive. So, I think it's still undervalued in the long run. I mean, you look at the FANG stocks, and Apple generates a huge amount of free cash flow, and they've still got a buyback. They've got a healthy dividend. And, you've got the super cycle with iPhone 8 coming up. So I can't think of a compelling reason to sell. I mean, it's better than holding cash.
Yeah, unless you got a better place to put your money. That's a good
yeah,
point.
Yeah, that's right.
All right.
That's exactly right. I mean, it's probably not the most enterprising investment in the world if you were really seeking, outsized returns. But I think it's a defensive one, a safe one.
All right, that safe is always good. Another favorite of yours, and you've been on this one for a long time, Geospace Technologies Corporation. Stock got hit with the oil crisis. It's been coming back a little bit. You've been trading in and out of it or still holding your core position?
No, we've just been accumulating it, Joel. If you were to go back and listen to some of our interviews over the last couple of years, we said from the beginning, really in late 2014, that if it took us 2 years to realize a return on that stock, we'd be okay with that. And, in the middle of 2015, we told the partnership that we intended to move out of technology so that we could reallocate some capital to hydrocarbons of the oil and gas industry. I mean, it was really an extraordinary fall in the price. I would say, in fact, by January 2016, it was something of a panic, right? So we were able to buy a significant part of the company in January at very favorable prices, $8, $9, $10 a share. And that wound up being a low-wise decision. Apple would recover, for example, but not nearly as much as our investments in oil and gas. So we went from, I think, 5.5% of the company at fiscal year in 2015 to 9% by the end of 2016. And we said repeatedly on your show over the years that, we hope to hit 10% of the company. So we're getting closer to that mark.
All right, just a real quick update on Legand. This is one you've been trading. You're flat at now, though. Still sticking with your thesis here on Legand Pharmaceuticals.
Absolutely. Joel, I would say for anyone interested in the subject of drug pricing, abuse of the Orphan Drug Act, anyone who's followed the Mylan or the Valiant stories, touring pharmaceuticals, anyone interested in what Martin Shkreli sort of helped expose, I would say go to lemelsoncapital.com, read our letter to the U.S. Senate Special Committee on Aging. It's a 9-page letter. It's worth reading for anybody interested in the topic. It really covers some important facts. Ligand is an interesting company because it really is at the nexus of this sort of new breed of pharmaceutical companies that doesn't engage in R&D per se. What they do is they try to locate these orphan drugs that can get these patent-like protections in the Orphan Drug Act of 1983, and then, of course, and almost limitless price increases after that once you have those protections in place. So Ligand's unique in that world because that's basically almost their sole function. Martin Shkreli, he took a lot of heat publicly for what he did, but what a lot of people don't realize is John Higgins, the CEO of Ligand Pharmaceuticals, who put Martin Shkreli in business. As smart as Martin Shkreli is, and of course his aptitude is misapplied, I don't think he taught himself that business model. I think he became aware of that business model. And he was very flamboyant in how he executed it. But there's a larger systemic problem. I think all Americans should be interested in it. In a way, I mean, these billions of dollars are sort of being thrown away on these exorbitant, and we can even say nefarious price increases. It's contributing to a larger fiscal crisis in our country, the national debt. So we should all be interested in it.
Hey, Reverend, this is Spencer. I want to ask you about your Domino's comment. You had some pretty interesting things to say. You said that Domino's investors will be better off buying tulip bulbs in March of 1637. You said that their company or their debt structure resembles a pyramid in shape. So elaborate on your Domino's short position.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. So first, let me just say some good things about Domino's management team. The founder of the company is really an archetype of, I think, astute and ethical corporate leadership. And I think the current management team, I don't want to indict them too much because they may not be fully aware of sort of this path they've gone to. And it's part of an industry-wide situation. I mean, if you look at Papa John's, it's not totally dissimilar from Domino's, although Papa John's is significantly better capitalized. But if you just walk through some of the basic numbers of Domino's, I mean, there's always positive things being said. All these analysts are saying great things. KeyBank came out last week after we released our earnings, and they quickly put a $200 price on the stock. You know, you have to ask yourself, at what price does it make sense? I mean, okay, there's some growth in revenues and some growth in earnings, but if you were to look back over a decade, over 10 years, you'd find that revenue per share went from, say, $22 a share at fiscal year 2006 to $46 in the last 12 months. You know, it's about double. But during that time, book value per share went from -9 to -40. So you're buying a company that has no equity. So what does that make you as a common stockholder? It really makes you almost like a bondholder. You're sort of buying the debt because you've got this massive amount of debt. But you don't have really the protections of a senior secured noteholder. You don't have that sort of first position that the debt holders do. And this is a company with really de minimis cash on hand and enormous debt. I think their debt's $2.23 billion. And they're really relying on this expansion, especially internationally, to grow revenues. And these international traders are just not that profitable. I mean, they're subject also to any changes in the currency. So they're really relying on a strong dollar. It looks like under the Trump administration that's not going to be a priority. And, you know, you look at their costs of labor and energy, and especially food costs, which labor and food is like 50% of the operating costs of these franchisees. If you look at just the cheddar block price on the CME, and if that went up like 25 cents a pound, you'd be looking at operating costs at a franchisee going up by $2.2 million. If you multiply that times, I think it's 1,325 franchisees, you've got an entirely different picture. And, you know, these debt covenants are egregious. I mean, if this company couldn't meet its 2019 principal payments, which is 800 and somewhat million, I think, you know, you would have a default. And, you know, there's a saying from Proverbs, you know, the borrower is the slave to the lender. The rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is the slave to the lender. When you have a company this in debt, I think it goes from compulsion and addiction, you're addicted to sort of cheap money, to you're boxed in. I mean, you don't really have that many options. Domino's is basically owned by its lenders. I mean, they have all sorts of really restrictive debt covenants. And I don't know that the common equity, the buyer of the common equity today, fully realizes they're buying something with negative equity, and they don't have the protections of the lenders. So, you know, you're like an almost exact opposite situation you'd want to be in with a good value investment, where you could make an equity act like a bond. You'd have like an equity bond situation where you're getting the benefits of a dividend, but where there's no debt, for example, you could treat it like a bond almost. And those becomes almost like a bond payment in a financially sound company. But in this situation, it's almost exactly the opposite. You're taking all the risk with none of the protections because you have negative equity.
What about their technology? You know, the technology is something that they've been lauded for in the past, is for getting ahead of their competitors in terms of technology.
Sure.
It's super easy to order pizza, go on the app. They're just, if you look at, you know, other fast food or pizza places, Domino's is something that they've put a focus on that, and it's certainly helped the business. So, I mean, how does that play into your vision?
Do you think it's defensible? I mean, is the site that good? I mean, you go to the Domino's and say, like, wow, it's incredible. I mean, I see something that looks like almost like 1999 graphics is what I see when I go there. I mean, it's just okay. I don't think it's defensible. I mean, where's the intellectual property defending it? I mean, this isn't, you know, we're not Facebook sitting in Silicon Valley, you know, with a bunch of guys having a hackathon, you know, all night long. It was just okay, frankly. And, you know, they should be applauded for being out in front. I mean, every entity in the world probably could benefit from technology, right? The question is it defensible? I mean, do you think Papa John's or Pizza Hut can't emulate that if they chose to?
Well,
would it take?
I mean, right, they're not Facebook, but the fact that they're ahead of their competitors, it's easier to order Domino's than it is to order Papa John's. I don't know. I mean, It is easy. I've done it before.
I've eaten it too, actually. And, you know, I don't know that the premium should be placed on that. I think that's a story that's driving the stock. I'm not convinced that it's a defensible competitive advantage over the long run. That's all I'm saying. You know, I think when you buy a stock, Spencer, you have to ask yourself, you know, you have to be able to delineate between price and value. Price is what you're paying and value is what you're getting. I mean, at what price does that value come at? Is it really $200 a share like KeyBank is suggesting in their note last week? I don't know that investors today are really asking that question, but at what price?
Reverend, let me interrupt you here for a second. So, not doubting your thesis on this or anything. I mean, is this something that the company is, like, fully aware of? Because, like, you talk about, you know, things with Legan and, like, it's the, you know, the higher-ups kind of knowing what they're doing and kind of almost I don't want to use the word criminal kind of, approach to it. But, obviously they run these kind of, these kind of deals and the debt structure and everything. I mean, 50 different accountants and, you know, different bankers and stuff. I mean, is it something, you know, that's being done malicious or is this something that they don't really recognize they're doing? Or is it just based on cheap money and they're just counting on cheap money and
the cash to keep
coming in?
Yeah, really good question, Joel. So when we compare these two, Ligon is great to run this parallel. You know, we questioned Ligon's accounting in 2014. We wrote 6 reports. And as you probably know by now, they're facing 12 class action lawsuits for securities fraud. We said in 2014 that one of their key royalty-generating assets, Kyprolis, would fail to Takeda Pharmaceuticals' Velcade. We wrote that in 2014 report. That happened last year in the fall. The stock dove precipitously. We stated publicly in July... we stated in July that if they had to write down the value of their Viking entry, that they would suffer a precipitous fall. 10 days after we made those comments, that's exactly what happened. The company's saying. So, when you have 12 law firms alleging securities fraud, something's wrong, and now it's becoming a bigger issue. In the case of Domino's, you said malicious. You know, if I was forced to bet, I don't know these people, but I would bet it's not malicious, not as in calculated. I would bet that they simply got carried away with their own story of their own success. And it's a good story, but it's not that good, actually. I mean, again, if we look back over the last decade, revenues have gone from roughly $1.4 billion to $2.3. It's roughly doubled. Net income has roughly doubled from $100 million to $200 million. But during that time, total equity has gone from minus $500 to minus $1.9. And the market cap has gone from $1.7 billion to $8 billion. So, it's getting really super expensive. I do think, even if it's not malicious or calculated or on the part of management of Domino's, I do think they could do a much better job at warning investors. You listen to this investor conference they gave recently, and they're just so upbeat about everything. And I don't think they're doing an adequate job of warning investors of the potential risks. I mean, something like 5 states now are going to have minimum wages going to be $15. I mean, the cheddar price, it's volatile. It tends to go, it's been really artificially low and for a while and throughout 2015 and 2016. So, they really need to do a better job of cautioning investors, I think. And I think any prudent management team would always err on the side of caution when it comes to their own stock. And they really should come out first telling investors where the risks are at. So I wish they'd do a better job of that, certainly.
Do you think there's something that they could rectify this? Is this kind of like a snowball out of control and,
I think it's getting a little bit out of control, absolutely. I mean, they've got now a dividend that they're trying to pay all the time. And, they've managed to goose revenue per share and EPS by share by these buybacks. But should a company with minus $40 a share in book value be borrowing more to pay dividends?
Do you have a target?
Look at the price they're buying at.
Do you got a target on it?
Look at the price they're buying. It's probably worth $50 to $75 a share. We keep building our short. It's not only our biggest short position; it's the biggest short position we've ever taken in a company in the history of our fund.
All right, we will.
And I would say, just like we said in the Skechers, you should look at our Skechers short in 2015. You know, we said the slightest bump on the road is going to be a precipitous fall. I would say the same thing with Domino. You know, anyone who's in business along the road, business is nothing but a sequence of bumps on the road. There's going to be a bump in the road for this company. There's going to be some sort of problem with cost or projections, and people are going to start asking questions about the price. And I think when that happens, they're going to realize it. These are really, really expensive valuations. You've got the company buying back shares at, I think, the last purchase.
A little bit too high.
$149 a share.
All right, we need to wrap things up. We've been on the line with Reverend Emmanuel Lemelson. He's the founder and president of the Lantern Foundation. Thanks a lot, Reverend. We'll be talking to you again soon.
Yeah, great joining you guys. It was a pleasure to be on your show. Take care.